With spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
Greetings. Welcome to the NASCAR NBC podcast. Your host, Nate Ryan, here with the NASCAR Hall of Famer, Dale Jarrett. We're here on the Monday after Bristol Motor Speedway. First round cutoff race, DJ, and NASCAR gets its 19th winner of the 2022 season. Its fourth straight first-time winner this season. And now they've had Austin Dillon, Eric Jones, Bubba Wallace, and now Chris Buescher all win for the first time in 2022. So four straight, bringing us to 19. I think it's a certainty we get to 20. I mean, Truex hasn't won yet. He's been running well. Blaney hasn't won yet. I'm glad you're on as our guest because you took some grief for predicting early in the year that there were going to be 16 winners. And I'm not pleading guilty here because it was other analysts, I think, who disagree with you. Maybe we should blame KP for disagreeing the most. And there were some other drivers. I know Denny Hamlin also said, no way NASCAR is going to get to 16 winners. So now we're here at 19. So I'm going to give you a chance to like take your victory lap and tell us, how'd you know? Did you know that this was going to be this kind of year because of the car? Was that the reason why?
You know, when I said that, actually, we had had a number of new winners at that time, and it just looked like that this car was going to present a lot of different options for drivers and teams, and opportunities is probably a better word, that we hadn't seen before. And it just seemed to me at that time that if we were ever going to get in this situation before teams and drivers figured this car out, that we could get to that number. I just threw it out there that I believe this is the year that we can actually see that happen. Really not thinking that it would go over that number. But as we sit here now with, as you pointed out, you know, I mean, there's Martin Truex Jr., Ryan Blaney, we think is going to win at some point in time, among others. I mean, Brad Keselowski ran great at Bristol, and you have to think that he's going to be a factor when we go to Talladega. And so opportunities are there. So it's been fun to watch and see all of this. And, you know, that's just free advertising for NASCAR racing whenever – you know, you can boast that you've had 19 winners. And the thing that we have to look at now, will a playoff driver ever win one of these races again this year?
Yeah, that's the conversation that we all expected to have, along with will we break the all-time record for winners in the season, which, by the way, we just tied it with 19. Yeah, also, how many non-playoff drivers will win races? We're up to 3 in a row now with, as I said, Eric Jones at Darlington, Bubba Wallace at Kansas, now Chris Buescher at Bristol. I was going to get to this later, but I'll just bring it up now, DJ. I mean, it seems to me as if what we're seeing here, again, it's, of course, related to the next-gen car, but whenever we used to talk about the playoffs starting, it would always be, you know, Chicagoland Speedway, the top 10 speeds in the opening practice are all playoff drivers, or the, you know, the top 10 finishers are all playoff drivers. And it seems as if this year we're not seeing that level of dominance. And I asked Ross Chastain and Joey Logano both about this at Bristol this past weekend, and they made points that were probably obvious to somebody like you, but not to me. Like Ross said,
it's different. This car has reset that whole thing where, like, you can't bring different headers here. You can't bring a new aero package. Like, you're trying to maximize everything, but we all have the same parts. You can't build a new right front spindle and save it for the playoffs, and you can't build, you know, bring different brake pads that they've found in testing to be better and bring them now. Like, there's nothing else to bring. Like, we all order the same stuff, and this has been the greatest reset this sport has ever seen, ever. Like, from the very first race, you could build a better car. Now you can only assemble a better car. We all build off the same control arms, chassis, body panels. Like, we all scan them in our Hawkeyes and we bring them here and we try not to let the sun hit them, and we get them through tech and then we race them and they're so equal. It's been the greatest reset. So there's geometry and setups, but you're just moving stuff around on the car. You can't bring different materials because we all buy the same stuff.
Logano said,
yeah, I mean, there's only certain areas you can develop, right? And it's not really many parts on the race car that is, so it's smaller, and so it comes down to setups. You know, we're all playing with the same, you know, the same deck of cards when we start, and it's just kind of how you play that hand. And it varies from track to track, and especially, I said, coming to Bristol for the first time, someone can hit it that's not really expected to, right? It's hard to have just a clear advantage going into where you can miss your setup a little bit and still be pretty good, right? That's how it's been in the past. Is if someone's just got better cars, more capability in their car, they can miss the setup and still run 5th to 10th. Now, if you miss your setup, you're probably running 15th to 20th, right? Which is, it's just a lot different now. And then because of that, you have different winners because there's more capable cars out there. And no one has a clear advantage in a lot of different ways. There's some tracks that, you know, certain manufacturers may have advantages over others, but it's not huge like it used to be. Is teams that might have a little bit of an advantage here and there because they figured something out for a little bit. You know, it's just keeps changing, right? Like, and everyone's trying to figure out not only the setups, but where is the low-hanging fruit on this car when you're developing it from a, you know, at the wind tunnel and those type of things. What can and can't you do? You used to have teams that were strong for 3 to 4 months at a time. Now it's 3 to 4 weeks at a time. And it just seems like that cycle happens a lot quicker now.
For the remaining 7 races, will the powerhouse teams ever figure out how to get that advantage just with setup-related cars?
I don't think that advantage exists right now. I believe that they're so concerned about the parts and pieces that they have to work with that they know exactly what they can and can't do with it. They're treading lightly because of some things and penalties that they've seen people get by trying to tinker with these things just a little bit. So those advantages that they could once get because they were bigger teams with more employees, more opportunities to work on things and to give them an advantage, just don't exist now. So yeah. I think it's the opportunities are endless for what we could see as far as drivers, because we keep talking about, you know, I mean, don't think that we would have sat down and said that Chris Buescher was going to win at Bristol. You know, was he going to win anywhere? Yeah, maybe Daytona and Talladega. We saw him run really well at Sonoma, so might pop up at a road course. But, you know, before, they just couldn't find themselves in that position as much. And you're right, the speed charts look completely different now, what little practice time they get. The running order through the races, we saw a lot of the playoff drivers migrate and get good finishes into the top 10. But a lot of the race is not what you saw there, where we used to see, and, you know, 12 of the 16 would be in that top 15 or something. Yeah. But that didn't happen at Bristol and hasn't happened in the other races. So I really don't see that happening this year. Now, as they get a winner to look over these cars, and I know there's going to probably be some changes coming, because I really believe that the new car, as great as it's been for competition and what we've seen, and we talk about 19 winners, some things were exposed about the car. They have been at some other places, but at Bristol, and there is no other track like Bristol, but you had to think that these things would eventually happen at other places, to where the loads were this high and the speeds this fast through the corners. So there's some work to be done there after that Bristol race.
Where do you think the low-hanging fruit might be on setups? You know, Logano saying that Team Penske hasn't figured out like the clear advantage with this car. Is it a mindset shift, I guess, for teams and drivers, where it used to be like, hey, we'll save our best, lightest stuff for the playoffs? How do you do it when it's just setup related, I guess? Like, how do you do it where you, that low-hanging fruit, that suspension stuff? Because I guess if everybody's working on setups, it's different than working on parts and knowing that we can save this for the last 10 races and no one else is going to have it.
Yeah, I think that we saw some teams and drivers probably through the regular season, after they got themselves solidly locked in, and it was quite obvious that nobody was going to have a tremendous amount of playoff points to benefit them a lot going through the playoffs with each round, that we saw teams trying some things. I think there were probably more failures than gains in a lot of it. I thought at one time that maybe Chase Elliott and his team had figured out a lot of stuff, but didn't show, if they did, they haven't brought it yet because yeah. they really struggled. I mean, yeah. I know he finished second at Bristol, but
he didn't qualify well. He didn't look good at Darlington.
And no, no, and yeah. he just didn't. They performed as everyone else had problems at Bristol.
Yeah.
They didn't have any problems, and they took advantage of that, which is partly what you have to do. So I don't see that there's a lot there. Yeah, it used to be that, okay, everything that we learned for the first 26 races, we're incorporating that into new cars to build for the 10-race playoffs.
Yeah,
there's no advantage to that now. I know they're having to build and rebuild a lot of the parts and pieces that they're mandated to run from a standpoint of making sure they don't have more failures.
Yeah.
But getting things that have given them an advantage, I think it's more about there are going to be tracks that certain manufacturers are going to run better at than the others. So I think you try to manage whenever you go to where you're not and you not as good at certain places and types of tracks. And you really have to step up and take advantage of your driver and the advantage that your car may give you at certain tracks, like the Toyotas at the mile and a half.
Right.
They have to be, Denny Hamlin has to be outstanding at Texas. They just have to perform because they know that's an opportunity. Because yeah. when they go to the Roval at Charlotte, they know there hasn't been a road course yet that the Toyotas have performed well at. So this shapes up as a very interesting round for the manufacturers if you look at it, simply because of those things. And drivers that do better at Talladega and then some like the car. The Toyota hasn't performed well at the Roval. So those drivers, Denny Hamlin and Christopher Bell, they understand they've got to make hay when they can, and that'll be certainly at Texas and at Talladega before they get to that.
Texas is next, and then after that, Talladega and then the Roval. So certainly a lot of opportunity here for
yes.
another surprise winner. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, obviously the way the Toyotas ran at Kansas, and there's still a first-time winner possibility there with Ty Gibbs. I mean, it would be a
no
stunner,
doubt.
But at the same time, it's not like he hasn't run well enough
yeah.
to be there. Make sure you focus on what DJ says. You called the winners of Darlington and Kansas? Is that right?
Okay. I believe so, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
For sure. Yeah, I jumped out on the limb with Bubba a little bit at Kansas. I knew that I did not know at the time that I picked that. I do know now that that was the same car that Kurt Busch drove there.
Oh, really? Okay.
To win. But okay. I wasn't privy to that information before. I just felt like that Bubba ran well that day that Kurt won at Kansas also, but
yeah.
he had two penalties that sent him to the back because of his pit crew, and he was never really given a fair chance to run right up there with his teammate at that race. Don't know that he would have outrun Kurt Busch, but I knew that he had run well enough that, hey, he's in a situation now, we've seen him perform well, and I just felt like that it was a good time to take a big underdog, and he went and performed there. So I think you could see another scenario at Texas to where these Toyotas are going to be very strong, hard to beat in that situation. Yeah, a Ty Gibbs is very capable winner. Martin Truex Jr., very capable of winning at Texas. So, you know, this trend, if you will, may continue for sure.
All right, well, I don't make my fantasy lineup until I check in with the Jarrett and Associates pick on the pre-race show, as Kyle Petty calls your prediction/betting service. So definitely be paying attention to that. And again, you were on with 16 winners. 16 winners plus, and you also picked Ryan Blaney to win Saturday at Bristol, and certainly seemed like he wow. had one of the best cars,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah. I think he and I both were disappointed in the things that happened there,
yeah.
and you know, it didn't even take, you know, to get to a lap 100 for him to
right.
have his problems, and I think he did. I mean, we saw a Ford win. I thought going in that the Fords were going to be the ones to beat on Saturday night at Bristol, but having that issue early on, you have to applaud them for going in and being able to repair that car enough to get back out and make laps and gain a few more spots. I think he would have made it through whether they finished last or next to last anyway with everything that transpired, but they did a tremendous job. And, you know, I don't think that it's going to be a Daniel Hemric from 2021 not winning all year until the championship
right.
race comes along, but that could very well be the case with Ryan Blaney. You know, they're solid enough everywhere that he certainly could be that driver that could maneuver his way through the rounds and be part of the championship four without ever winning a race until he got there.
Yeah, so he was one of many guys who had problems. Normally, we don't go this deep into the podcast without talking about the race, but unfortunately, DJ, not a lot to talk about positive-wise about the racing in the car, and you already said it, that the next gen got exposed. You said that on the post-race show as well. You said it's been fantastic racing for most of the year with the next gen. It had a lot of close finishes, a lot of outcomes in doubt until the final 10 laps, but as you said, it kind of got exposed at Bristol Motor Speedway. I know Bristol presents challenges in terms of the loading and everything like that. We're probably not going to see, hopefully, the steering problems that we saw Saturday night again through the final seven races of the season, but you had all those steering issues that especially the Toyota teams seem to be affected by. You had many tire problems. I'm not really sure that was necessarily car related, but certainly is affected by the setup they're using. And what's interesting is this now happening in this situation that NASCAR and its teams have never been in before. They have essentially have spec cars. The teams can't just fix this. They're at the mercy of what's being supplied to them by these single source vendors. And, you know, Martin Truex Jr. on our broadcast Saturday night was the latest to be very critical, the way Kevin Harvick was at Darlington. So I know you didn't race in a spec series type environment the way the next gen has created in the Cup Series, but what do you make of what this must be like for teams to be wrestling with all of this?
Well, I think it's a difficult situation because it is something that's completely different than what they've ever faced before with this. You know, they, as you pointed out, if they had problems in the past, then they only had to look at what they were doing that may have created that by making the majority of the parts and pieces that they raced. They can look at this now, but there's really no change in it. I mean, there is still somewhat of a supply problem with everything. Most everybody now has enough cars and parts and pieces, but if you really get in a bind, everything's still not there. And even what you are getting and what you do have, you can't do anything to. So if there's issues with it, it's not like it can be fixed from one week to the next because you're not allowed to do anything there. So I think this really has the teams concerned and why we do see a lot more things happening than what we have in the past. And I think that not being able to get that advantage for the top tier teams is something that they're not accustomed to, you know, and so they're having to battle and fight and figure things out as they go along. We shouldn't have expected that we would just all of a sudden bring a completely new car with all new parts and pieces to the racetrack. You have to think back that when this car first started being developed, all of a sudden the pandemic hit and this was kind of put to the side. And so the testing that actually was done and the parts and pieces started being made, it had to be done quickly because they had this time. 2022 is when they wanted to start running this car. And they weren't going to change that. And so a lot had to happen quickly. And when you do things quickly, sometimes everything's not up to par and some things get overlooked. And so then you start getting things exposed. And so the teams don't like to be put in that situation, but they are. And, you know, I think it's more now about surviving these rounds. It's not just the things that are happening with the car. You know, we see the pit crews make more mistakes than we have ever seen. And we know that the pressure ramps up when you get into the playoffs. And we know that now each position is harder to gain back if you lose that on pit road. And so, you know, they're being put in a very uncomfortable position. And they don't want to put their drivers in a worse position because, you know, we've heard some of the conversations over the radios and those aren't pretty either. So this has become difficult for them.
And the pit crews are dealing with something different as well. And we're 29 races into the single lug nut era, but it's still obviously creating problems. I didn't foresee it would go this long, but I understand why.
Yeah. You know, the one thing is that the teams try to get better and faster at these pit stops, understanding what's at stake. We do see this, and especially, you know, the majority of the things that we see now are happening on the left side. And that is because the jackman is basically either being told, or this is how they practice it, that he's expecting those tire changers and the tire carriers to do their job in a certain amount of time. And they're not taking the time if you watch these, they're not taking the time to look and make sure that both tire changers have completed their job. They're looking in one direction, and when they see that, they assume the other one is done. Especially they're looking at the rear now that he should be finished, and they're just taking their chance that he is done. Because if he takes that split second to look before he drops the jack, then you've lost time. And that may be 1, 2, 3 spots. And they're willing to take the chance that everyone did their job and there wasn't an issue. But we saw it with Kevin Harvick's team the other night. That was the left front tire once again. Jack Mann's looking at the left rear, never even looking at the left front. And all of a sudden you have an issue, and you know, take any chance away that they shouldn't have been changing left side tires to begin with. We know that. Yeah. But if they were trying to win the race, but they were doing that, and by doing it and having the problem, it took any chance away.
Yeah, another discussion entirely.
Yes,
it seems like a chance worth taking until the jack goes down and the guy's not done. Because
yes.
once the car's on the ground, you can't change it at that point. And that's
the
problem.
And that, you know, that's the driver's cue to take off, you know, and as soon as he moves. And so, there's a lot of issues there still. And this isn't going to fix itself over these next 7 races. So, you know, somebody's going to, once again, in these next 2 rounds, going to take themselves out of contention of moving forward and being a part of the championship four. Don't know who that will be, but we've seen a number of teams, and you know, could even be we see quite a few changes in pit crews within organizations that may be trying to, you know, put their very best there. I think you're on a slippery slope when you start doing that, but we've seen it before.
Yeah, we heard of one today that Denny Hamlin now will have the 18 pit crew. We learned of that today from Joe Gibbs Racing, which is certainly interesting. The problems with the next gen car, DJ, do you think it's a wake-up call for NASCAR? Probably is not going to pop up again, you would hope, at the tracks that NASCAR will go to here the last 7 races. But can they hold some sort of emergency meeting with their suppliers and like just say, hey, we can't have situations like this? I don't know. Maybe the counter argument also is like the fact that the first race at Bristol was on dirt.
Yeah.
The potential was always going to be there. This is going to be a wild card. I don't know.
Yeah. They had no idea that, because there is no other track like Bristol to where it puts that type of load on everything. You know, with the old cars, you used to do things differently with the cars just so they would be able to withstand everything that Bristol brings with the high banks, the fast speeds. This car had not been tested to that point. I mean, you think about Dover, that it could be somewhat the same type with the concrete surface and relatively high banks, but nothing like what the Bristol track is. And by with it being on dirt, it wasn't even a comparison.
Yeah.
The speeds exceeded anything and everything that the drivers and teams thought that they may, and the continuous speeds, I think, was the biggest thing that they were able to keep attacking this racetrack lap after lap after lap. And you know, that also created the situation of not having a lot of passes for the lead,
right?
You know, being out front, it wasn't necessarily that the air was great, it's just the speeds. We heard a number of drivers talk about that the cars were going through the center of the corner so fast, you couldn't even gain an advantage unless somebody made a mistake, got loose going in or right in the middle or something like that. So you know, that there were a lot of things. And as far as NASCAR being able to make changes, because of the supply chain,
can't do it.
Because it'd have to be for every team. It can't just be that, oh, okay, we've got these 12 drivers that are still in the playoffs. We'll get them to change their stuff. Can't be done that way.
Yeah.
So they're in a box now. Certainly, they will move forward with better information and take this and make things better for the future. But that the future means 2023.
Yeah, that's one of the downsides about having a spec series with 36 essentially full-time cars, is you can't be as nimble as the teams could be in changing things up and adapting to something.
Exactly.
You're relying on companies to do this across the board for every team, and the teams, their hands are tied, as you said. I'm glad you did bring up the aero and the speeds. Denny Hamlin and Kevin Harvick both said that they're running faster in the center of the corner than on the straightaways, which unfortunately you never want to see at this type of track, especially. Fewest lead changes in 13 years. Scott Graves, the crew chief for Chris Buescher, said it was a no-brainer for him to take 2 tires because he felt like you get out front. I mean, we saw it with Buescher's teammate, Brad Keselowski, ran the first 125 laps on the same set of tires, never pitted, won the first stage. And he had a fast car, but it was also true that the leader could really, it felt like, control this race and was more track position. Unfortunately, similar race at Martinsville. Next Gen's been great, certainly on the speedways. This is sort of the backwards than I think what we expected. I'm looking forward to Texas. It seems to have improved the mile and a half racing, but short tracks have been a little bit of a challenge for Next Gen.
Yeah, but if you think about it in reality, and I didn't think about this until just recently as to why that may be, but the old cars were all developed, so the cars were offset, so you could make the left side as straight and have more weight there and everything. These cars are built, and they're all the same for every single racetrack. They're basically a straight-up car. That's why they perform well on the road course, and it doesn't affect them as much on the bigger tracks, because on a short track, every short track racer in America will tell you he wants to offset. That's why they had to put a limit as to how much it could be offset in years past with the old cars, because you would just keep doing it as much as you could and making that left side weigh and control more of everything. Now they don't have that.
Yeah.
So that at every short track that you go to across America, drivers and teams have figured these things out, and that's what they do to make their cars drive, and that's what creates the competition. And so it makes it more difficult when you don't have that ability to do that now.
Is that maybe a potential solution that NASCAR could use to fix it? Or
I think that has to be in the discussion, that because they realize too, obviously, you know, they don't want to see that. You know, they want to see competitive racing. You know, we do, surely to goodness we can do something on everything under a mile or a mile and under if we really want to enhance the racing. Hell, we put stuff on the racetrack to help it, and that obviously didn't. So, yeah, why shouldn't we be able to make that change?
Well, that's certainly hopefully something that will be addressed ahead of Martinsville, which is the third-round cutoff race. So one thing about Bristol that was interesting to me, DJ, is it did feel kind of old-school, you know, attrition. Cars competing against cars that were already out of the race, like Austin Cindric being several laps down from tire problems, but him trying to make up laps to pass Kyle Busch, who had an engine failure. Daniel Suarez having to drive this completely undrivable car.
Yeah.
It was, I think, five or six laps down just to make the playoffs. What did you make of that? Because, you know, I'm not trying to date you, but when I started following NASCAR, it was like mid to late 90s, and I missed out on the era when not every car was as bulletproof as they are now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind
of
different.
Yeah, you had engine failures, parts failures, crashes. You literally, at a place like Bristol, you would want to just survive those first 300 laps if you could, because you knew then there were going to be fewer cars on the track. And, you know, I don't care how fast a car you ever have there, you're encountering traffic almost every single lap. So once a restart was put there, then you're catching cars within 5-10 laps at the most, and so you're always around cars. But as that attrition started in those races, it made it somewhat easier, and I think we saw some of that the other night once the big wreck happened on the back straightaway after the restart with Daniel Suarez. I don't know how he held onto that car for that long, but he was at that point making it work, and he eventually made it work and moved himself on into the round of 12. But I think that is one thing that we will see. Probably, I don't know that we'll see it everywhere is the thing. But it did bring back memories of that type of racing and how it changed the racing and the things that you looked at and drivers and teams doing whatever they could to complete every single lap. Most of them did. I think Martin Truex told his team, I ain't driving that thing anymore. Just load the damn thing up and we're going on and we'll see you in Texas.
I'm out of the playoffs. He already wants this season really to be over.
Yes.
So we also had a surprise winner. Chris Buescher wins for Brad Keselowski, Roush Fenway Racing. Are you surprised at how tough this year has been for Roush Fenway Keselowski Racing, or did you know this was going to be a slog when Brad went over there?
I can't say that I was surprised. I wondered how the new car may affect them. Could it be in a positive direction since they didn't have to build all the parts and pieces like they were before? So was this going to help them become competitive and more competitive quicker than what the task might have been? Because they had fallen pretty far down and were having a hard time competing over there. But I will have to say I'm still surprised that they are this far. I mean, we've seen them at more tracks and at more races be competitive. And Brad probably more just recently that we've seen him.
Right.
But Chris Buescher has been there a lot.
Yes.
And it becomes very evident as to why they wanted to sign Chris Buescher and keep him there. A very talented young race driver. And I think that he's showing us that – that there's even more talent there than maybe what we thought as he won his Xfinity championships and what he's been doing to keep himself in contention here. So good to see for them. Really, really good. And these are the good things that the new car has brought of, you know, right. with Trackhouse winning, with their two drivers getting them their first wins in the Cup Series, and then for Brad to be able to have this as an owner now, as a winning car owner. Really cool to see, and was fun to watch him.
It is cool to see, and it has brought some new faces to the front, like Chris Buescher. And that's been the surprise for me, that he has outrun Brad Keselowski more often than not
yeah.
in the 2022 season. And perfect setup by you. This brings us to our Motor Mouse of the Race, presented by eBay Motors, which is where we take a quote from the past race weekend and talk about it at length. And this week, the quote is from Brad Keselowski on Chris Buescher. After the win at Bristol, Brad Keselowski said,
"I wanted Chris Buescher to drive the 21 Cup car about 5 years ago. I thought that highly of him, and there was a number of reasons why it didn't come over, timing and so forth. But I thought that was a natural fit for him, and I thought a lot of his talent then. I went to a Ford driving school with him somewhere around 2015, I was blown away by his talent and his feel for the car. And I just felt like he didn't have the support system around him to be successful with the teams he was with. And so I kind of felt like he was a hidden free agent gem that wasn't being scouted properly, and felt that way for a handful of years. And the first thing, it was literally the first thing I did when I signed the papers at RFK was the next step after signing my papers was putting an offer in front of him to give him a contract extension. And I felt like he was somebody we could build around and get results. And today clearly shows that that was the case.
DJ, interested in your take on all of that, because you kind of found yourself, I think, in that situation in the early parts of your Cup career before you went to Wood Brothers Racing and had the success that put you on the radar of getting to Joe Gibbs Racing and then Robert Yates Racing. So some parallels there maybe with like what Chris Buescher's been going through.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. Yeah, and you know, the efforts, if you're in that position, it's not a lot of fun because
right.
you don't know, is this ever going to happen for me? You
yes.
know, you don't know. And I think that what Chris Buescher was able to do, as people looked, they understood that the equipment that he was driving for a good while wasn't up to par, but yet he was performing at a high level at certain tracks. It wasn't a weekly thing, but you knew the potential was there and what you saw. And you know, that's great, seeing that Brad was able to get a hold of this early on and understand what Chris Buescher was as the driver. So I appreciate that and the effort that he made then once he got his ownership deal done, that, hey, this is what we have to do. This is the first thing. And when you get high praise from a champion like that, means a lot. You know, I think the one thing that helped me as I look back on my career was having Cale Yarborough to sign me in 1988 as he was winding down his career. I drove a partial schedule for him. And even though his team that he owned wasn't one of the top tier teams at the time, they performed at a high level. And so people looked at you when you were able to compete very well. They saw that potential was there. And so I think that helped me when the Wood Brothers had to find someone to sub for Neil Bonnett, that they had seen enough with through Cale that, you know, they were quick to call me in. And so we made a deal there, and you know, the rest is kind of history.
Yeah.
That it, you know, that was the turning point of my career, was being able to drive that 21. So yeah, I think that Chris Buescher is that type of driver, that there's still a lot of wins in that, the talent of that young man. And I'm sure that they're going to, not only will Brad try to keep him there, but Ford Motor Company wants to hang on to him also.
Yeah, maybe Bristol in 2022 will be like Michigan in
yeah.
1991 and,
that's right.
and be the start of something big. That was our Motor Mouths of the Race, presented by eBay Motors. At eBay Motors, you can be your own pit crew with 122 million parts right at your fingertips. Get the right parts at the right prices. ebaymotors.com. Let's ride. All right, so wrapping up the podcast here, DJ, I wanted to talk to you about round of 12 preview, Jarrett and Associates. always going to pick your brain for this kind of knowledge. So we lose Kyle Busch, we lose Kevin Harvick, and now we've got 12 guys left. Interesting to me that Chase Elliott, as you mentioned, kind of a lackluster first round, but because of the regular season championship, points reset, and he is now in first again, 15 points ahead of Joey Logano on the basis of his 4 race wins, 5 stage wins, and the 15 playoff points he got for winning the regular season championship. So even though the nine car maybe had a middling first round. Yeah. And to me, he's still a favorite to make the championship four at this point.
Has to be. And it's strictly based. I mean, if we watch the first round, as you pointed out there, if we look at that, we would say, well, no, how you make that guy a favorite? But it's because of the playoff points that he's been able to amass at this particular time that he gets through this round of 12, then he's going back to the top once again in the round of 8. And so huge advantage. And I think it's a great point for the fans to look at that wonder about, well, what does that regular season championship really mean? You know, why are they trying to win this stage? And why are they trying to get these wins at this time in the regular season and taking those chances? That, well, this is what it's about. You know, this is the closest we've ever seen since this was put into place, this type of format, that we've seen this be. But he has a sided advantage to the other 11 that are in this round of 12 with that. I realize 15 points can go away in a hurry because we saw that happen to Chase Elliott at Darlington. But he still goes in as the favorite there. You can't – Christopher Bell had three great races, all top five races in that round of 16, that first round. And he's going back to where he's down the list.
He's seventh in points.
Yeah.
Starting the round of 12.
Yeah, so that did nothing for him there. You know, I think he won a stage or two, so he might have one or two more points along the way there. Yeah. But that essentially, that's all that he got from that.
Yeah.
Even though he was in contention to win all three races, he didn't do that, and so he didn't get those five playoff points that would have come with that. And so now they're on that start back up. You have to say, though, that what we've seen from him, not just through that first round of playoffs, but through the year, maybe the best Joe Gibbs Racing driver and car on a regular basis, week in and week out, that he brings the speed. And I think he and Adam Stevens have a lot of good things going on there, and they'll be someone that we have to watch. Which I need two to put in my championship four picks because I lost Harvick and Tyler Reddick. So I'm down to only two people left. And so I'm basing it on Denny and Chase Elliott staying with me for a while.
Tyler Reddick, I think, was a trendy pick because you figure if he gets through the first two rounds, then Homestead is sitting right there. Then I think he would have been a candidate.
And that was my thinking exactly, that I thought that he definitely could go there and win, but didn't make it there. He might still go there and win.
Yeah. And you make a great point, too. The magnitude of the regular season, especially this year, with the non-playoff drivers winning the first three races, no one has gotten an extra five playoff points from that. Martin Truex Jr. missing the playoffs meant that playoff points he would have gotten for finishing fourth in the regular season standings went away. So suddenly, Chase Elliott, Joey Logano, Ross Chastain, three guys who, again, like, I can't think of anything those guys did in the first round. I mean, like you said, Chase Elliott finished second at Bristol. I think Logano had a strong finish. But, I mean, Chastain had average performances at Darlington and Kansas and then finished seventh, I think, at Bristol. Uh-huh. And now those guys are your top three to start this round.
Yeah.
So
once again there. I mean, and you look at Denny Hamlin. He's only, I believe I've written down that he's only plus four. Is that right?
Right. Plus four to the cut line. Yeah.
Yeah. So you just think about, I mean, he had 2 second place finishes and then had a strong car until he had the flat tire and the issues at Bristol. So, but he's right back in a battle once again. And, you know, as I think he, along with other Toyota drivers, Christopher Bell, and I think we talked about this, but he has to look at Texas as somewhere he needs to go get done. I know he's going to be good at Talladega, but at Talladega, the Toyotas are already in a short number as far as having teammates to help.
Right.
And I'm not sure how much he'll be able to count on Kyle Busch as a teammate to help any Toyota at this particular
time. At least he doesn't have to worry about him maybe helping RCR cars.
No, that's true.
But yeah, you're right.
But I don't know how much. I think he's going to – Kyle Busch is going to drive for himself and the hell with the rest of you, at this point in time. So I think Denny is going to put a lot of pressure on himself to perform at Texas and try to get that win there because he's not that far up as far as the cup line.
Yeah, and especially how bad Toyotas have been on road courses. I mean, the Roval doesn't look like it's going to be a savior for anybody left on that front.
No.
So you're right, Texas certainly magnified. We'll definitely be watching for that this weekend. And as always, we appreciate you joining here on the NASCAR NBC podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Nate.
We appreciate Dale Jarrett for joining us on the NASCAR NBC podcast. Thanks to producer Aaron Feldstein and motorsports manager Emily Conboy for coordinating DJ's appearance. As you heard, we taped this on camera just before NASCAR America Motormouths, and you can see the video version of the NASCAR on NBC podcast on the Motorsports on NBC channel on YouTube. Subscribe if you visit. There's lots of great bonus content, highlights, features, and interviews from NASCAR, as well as IndyCar, IMSA, Supercross, MotoGP, all on the Motorsports on NBC YouTube channel. The NASCAR Cup Series will open the round of 12 at Texas Motor Speedway. Coverage gets started Sunday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern on USA Network. Check out nbcsports.com/NASCAR for detailed schedules, start times, and coverage as always. And every Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern on USA, it's the new docuseries Race for the Championship. This is the inside look at the 2022 NASCAR Cup Series season. In the world of NASCAR, every driver has their story. The new docuseries Race for the Championship will give you an all-access pass behind the scenes like you've never seen before. Catch Race for the Championship Thursdays at 10 Eastern, 9 Central on USA. And if you have any NASCAR NBC podcast feedback, you can send it to me on Twitter, at Nate Ryan is my handle. Thanks again for listening to the NASCAR NBC podcast.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.